Welcome to A World of Good podcast. My name is Andrew Gale. Thanks again for joining us for this episode of A World of Good. I am still here in Chiang Mai, Thailand at our regional coordinators meeting, having a great time. We're actually at the very tail end of our meeting, sitting here in a really beautiful, warm, but beautiful porch area as I get to talk to two of my favorite people, not just people that I work with, but also my neighbors, John and Gwen Johnson. So thankful that you guys are here, and thanks for chatting with us today.
Yeah, we're glad to be here.
So we're doing a series right now on the Church of God around the world, just trying to help people get a picture of what the Church of God looks like, some of its history and what's happening. And so in this, we've talked about the fact that there are six different regions that are a part of the Church of God around the world. So we have U.S. and Canada, Latin America, Caribbean Atlantic, Africa, Asia Pacific, and Europe and the Middle East. And out of those six regions, four of them have what Global Strategy calls regional coordinators. And these are our people from Global Strategy that are serving, that are walking alongside the church in the region. But their main focus is supporting and working with our missionaries on the ground and with the international development projects that we do through the church. And so today we're talking specifically about the church in Africa. John and Gwen Johnson are the regional coordinators for Africa. And so we're going to get to hear a little bit about the history, the context, and just what the church in Africa looks like. So John and Gwen, again, we're really grateful you're here. How has your time been in Chiang Mai so far?
It's been great. Good conversations, good food, good fellowship. Doesn't get any better than that.
Right. And in Indiana, at least where I'm going to be going back to, I think we're going to be hitting like the teens for highs next week. And so we're currently in a place that we're hitting like the 80s most days. I mean, I'm wearing shorts. It's a very different experience here than what I'm going back to. But how has the conversation been with the team overall?
It has really been good. It's nice to sit with people who have similar assignment, but in very different contexts. And when you hear the nuances of what they do, what they say, how they interact, their relationships, it really gives you a new lens to look at what you do yourself.
Yeah, that's great. Now, you guys are serving as regional coordinators for Africa, but you've been serving as missionaries, as international pastors for a number of years. When did you first go on the field?
We left during the middle of camp meeting in 1980.
Wow.
Yes.
And you were leaving for what assignment? Where?
We were, at that time, was called short-termers, and we were going to teach conversational English in Mokpo, South Korea.
Okay. Now, how many different, I've asked you this question before, and I'm sure it's annoying to have to answer this, but how many different countries have you served in? And I don't mean just traveled to, because you've traveled to, I'm sure, a lot of countries, but how many countries have you actually lived in for a period of time?
We've lived in South Korea, Egypt, Lebanon, on the island of Guam, Vietnam. I think that covers it.
Yeah, globally. And then you taught, Dr. Johnson, taught at Warner Pacific in Portland for a number of years, which for some people is a different culture. For me, from the Midwest, it would be a different culture, but it is in the United States, of course.
It was a good place to serve. We were at Warner Pacific for 8 years, teaching missions and ministry.
That's wonderful. Yeah. For the last few years, you guys have been stationed in Cairo, which has been a great location for people that are Arabic speakers, and spent time in Egypt earlier in your term and so in your time overseas. So it's really neat that you've been able to have that connection.
It's been great. You know, in ministry, you don't often get to see the fruit of labor, but we were able to invest in some young leaders 30 some years ago, and those leaders are now in leadership in the church in Egypt, in a very, very healthy church. It just feels really good to now at this stage of our ministry to kind of experience their leadership in Egypt. It's awesome.
What a gift. What a gift. So you're regional coordinators for Africa. Give us a picture of what is included when we say Africa, because you've been living in Cairo, Egypt, and Egypt's technically part of the African continent, but for our purposes, it falls under the Middle East. So what is considered Africa in the way that the Global Strategy thinks about regions?
Well, you could almost look at the continent of Africa on a globe and draw a line where the Sahara stops. It's actually has another name called the Sahel. And it's kind of the gray green band that runs right across almost at the equator, a little bit north of that. And it kind of divides. So we would say that we're in sub-Sahara Africa.
That's right.
And while Africa has 54 different nation states in Africa, you know, I'm honestly not sure how many are in what would be considered sub-Sahel, but it's certainly not that 54. It might be 38 to 40 countries. And of those, Church of God is involved in, really directly involved in 14 or 15. And then there are two or three that there were work in the past, and we're trying to re-engage that work now.
Wow, that's great. So of the African continent, as you look at it, I know you guys have talked about kind of even breaking up sub-Sahara Africa into three regions. Can you give us a picture of how you've done that and maybe some of the benefit of thinking about it in that way?
Well, Africa is just a continent that is so huge, you can't believe it until you actually have to travel across it. But we work in West Africa with four countries in West Africa and five countries in East Africa and five countries in the South.
Wow.
And
so
we
it divides up pretty evenly.
Yeah,
actually.
So we work in three different regions.
Yeah, wow.
And then there's some other countries that are kind of on the edge, so where we have worked in the past and where we work presently. But there's another division in Africa that's pretty significant, and that's a linguistic division. So if we start really big or small, depending on your think of language size or language grouping, so there are more than 3,000 different language groups in Africa. So that would be tribal languages. If you kind of bring that down to something that's a little more manageable for us, you would think about the languages, the main language groups of those various countries. Then if you think of broad language groups, you could think of Swahili in East Africa or Bantu languages that have a similar root system. You've got French and you have English. And so it is a very diverse place language-wise. But one of the exciting things that's going on now is that there's kind of this recognition that of the 54 countries in Africa, 24 of those are French-speaking countries.
Wow.
And the Church of God, through Larry and Leanne Sellers, who have long had this vision, we have kind of set them free, in a sense, to begin to make connections with French-speaking countries. And all of this is actually with the blessing of the All Africa Assembly. And that's a really important piece of this language culture puzzle for
Absolutely.
Africa.
Yeah, it's not easily just divided by country, because those that French language, you know, sweeps in and out of all three of those well, at least two of the three regions.
Right.
You have, like, West Africa has some very French speaking countries, but so is places in East Africa like Rwanda. And then so that would be a really, it's not as easily divided of here's this language group and here's this language group. There's so much intermixing that makes it a puzzle of different cultures and languages.
Yeah. And then add in on top of that, there are two countries in sub-Saharan Africa, Angola and Mozambique, that are Portuguese speaking. and that adds extra layers onto the quilt.
Yeah. I think sometimes, again, because we don't have familiarity with some of these places, we can easily prescribe that they are all culturally the same. I we were talking about that this morning. I think we do that with Latin America because there's so much Spanish that's spoken. We assume that everyone in Latin America is culturally the same, and there is vast cultural differences and vast language differences in the way that they speak Spanish. But then you think about Africa. Again, it's really easy to think about sub-Saharan Africa in our mind's eye as this monocultural place that is actually a mixture of all kinds of tribes and cultures and history that have been thrown together in somewhat happenstance sorts of ways in countries that may not have been, the national borders that are there were more divided by Western minds than it was by Africans. So I mean, there's so much there that makes it a complicated place to serve.
Right? And layer onto that Islam and Arabic language through the slave trade originally, but today from North Africa south, there's a large migration movement, religious push for Islam.
Yeah.
And that comes with the Arabic language.
Yep. Culture, language, religion, location, geography, all play such a huge role in one of the largest regions, certainly the largest in terms of the amount of people that the Church of God has there, but also just large in terms of geography. We were talking with Don and Carolyn, and Asia Pacific has a lot of time zones because of how far it crosses, but Africa is huge in terms of geography from top to bottom, and just a difficult place to travel.
Gwen, you were going to talk about that.
Yeah, we looked it up, and air miles from Cairo to Cape Town, it's
so that's kind of the most northern point to the most southern,
right? 4,499.74 miles. By land, it's 6,161.4 miles. It's a long haul.
6,000 miles.
By time, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a
lot.
So
from Indiana to Portland, it's 2,400 miles. So you're doing...
Wow, doing that three times.
Three times.
Wow. Yeah. It's I think, a really important reminder. Again, because I think we also feel like travel should be easy, but travel in Africa is very complicated. So trying to create connection, I think that's one of the reasons the subregions is so important, because it's easier, not easy, but easier to travel in those subregions where you can potentially drive or catch a bus versus trying to fly around Africa, which can be very costly. I mean, some of the people when I was at the All Africa Assembly were traveling as long as I was from the U.S. to get to the All Africa Assembly when we were meeting in Tanzania, which is just crazy for me to think about. They're on the same continent, but because of how expensive and the layovers, they were traveling the same amount of time that I was.
Well, and the leader in Zimbabwe has traveled by bus 3 or 4 days to get to one of the sub-region meetings. So it is hard. It's expensive. And it is burdensome.
Yeah.
It's just difficult.
So when we've been talking about kind of Africa in general, but you kind of alluded to this already. And when we talk about how many churches and where the Church of God is, you said that we're in kind of 14 countries, but there's some others that are kind of, there's been historical connections, but not kind of current work there. How many churches does that account for? Or how many believers? Can you give us, of course, we are not a denomination that keeps really stringent records. So we recognize that these are fluid numbers that are given to us by, you know, these national leaders. And so we're not physically verifying by account. But based on some of what the information we've gotten, can you give us a ballpark, a picture of what that looks like?
So at least 2,800 churches across those 14 countries, 15 countries, and then more than 300,000 believers. Wow. For sure.
Yeah. Which is more churches and believers than in the United States. It's technically the largest region when we break up our region. So that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Can you give us a sense of when the Church of God started in Africa? You know, one of the things that I think has been really neat as we've talked is to hear how the Church of God started in a number of these different locations. So, you know, early on, I mean, even before 1900, it was in Latin America, really early in India. We've heard about some of the work in England that happened really early on. And so Africa isn't quite as early as some of those, but can you give us a sense of when the Church of God kind of got its feet on the ground in Africa?
Yeah, I think that the work in Kenya probably is the first work. Actually, it didn't start with people from the United States at all. There was a group from South Africa that came up to Kenya.
Wow.
They started a work, and then it really became more than they could do, and they handed it off to the Missionary Board of the Church of God in about 1922.
Wow.
And so the work at least is in the 20s, and then in East Africa was a primary focus. Like when I was growing up, there were just tons of missionaries. It felt like you'd hear missionary stories, but they were all from East Africa.
Yeah.
In the very early 60s, work started in the southern part. And then maybe 27, 28 years ago, through the work of the Sellers, it began in West Africa.
Wow. So it really has been an ongoing work, but starting back, 100 years ago.
Yeah.
I think that's, again, just so important to remember that the community we're part of, the global Church of God, is not new. you know, but it's also, you know, it continues to grow and change, but that there's been a presence there for a long time. And I love that it was started by people from South Africa. I think that's just fantastic.
Yeah. And I think to realize that there's this century long history, that the work that we are a part of, we really are on the shoulders of lots of really missionary giants in the past, but that the church is not in its infancy.
Yes.
The church is strong. It has its struggles and trials. Some of those are internal. Some of those are political, but because of the nature of the politics of their particular section of Africa, some of it is really just hard stuff because of drought, famine, cyclones, stuff that in some ways is climate change generated today.
Yeah.
And what the influence that Africa will have, this strong church in Africa, I think will have great bearing on the work in Europe in the days to come.
Yeah.
And probably the United States as well.
Yeah. No, I think that's such a great reminder. You know, if we think about the church as a living being and something that comes into being, you know, these aren't churches that are in their infancy. They're not even in their teenage years. These are adult churches. All of us adults have struggles that we go through. So, you know, just like churches in the U.S. that have struggles, so do they. But these are churches that have been around, that have been a part of ministry in their communities for a long, long time, which is so much even more of a reason why we get to just walk alongside them, them, rather than coming in assuming that we know how to do it when the church in Kenya has been doing it for 100 years.
Yep.
So one of the other pieces I think is helpful, I know we're in the Church of God, we hate structure. We want, you know, all autonomy and all of that. But give us a picture in Africa of what it looks like to be, for connection to happen on a regional level. Is there a structure, and what does that structure look like?
So there is a structure, kind of this unified effort where all Africa was trying to figure out how they can minister together, have conversations together, fellowship together. It started in 2017. Mike and Heather Webb were regional coordinators at that point. 2018, they had another meeting. Then it was 2022 when we met in Arusha, where it was kind of formalized. There was an election of leaders, and so we actually have a general director for Africa.
Yeah.
and that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so that structure, I mean, it's new. I mean, it's not something that's been around a while, still figuring out what that looks like, but it's at least giving a platform where the churches across Africa can connect and hear from each other, encourage one another. I think about Asia Pacific that's been doing this now for 40 or 50 years, and there's still challenges there, but at least there is a platform for those conversations and for unity to happen. And I feel like this is the early steps of creating space for some of that to happen, which is really exciting.
Right. And it also gives Africa a spokesperson or two into a broader conversation with the Church of God internationally.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you alluded to something earlier that I think would be really helpful and important to touch on. As you look at what Africa is going to look like in the coming 10 years, you know, we know from projections that, and we know from what they're experiencing now, that they have had significant changes in their climate, in the world that they live in. I can't tell you how many times we hear about floods that are happening in our churches. We've had multiple floods that have affected hundreds of families in the Church of God, thousands of people, and not thousands of people in a country, thousands of people that are part of our Church of God movement that were affected by flooding, by weather catastrophes, by drought, that are having struggles with food. Are you seeing that across Africa? And how is that going to play into the work of the church in the next decade?
Well, it is going to have a huge impact. If you think, I talked about that green-brown band across kind of North Africa, at the southern end of North Africa, the Sahara seems to be moving south. Mostly because people are cutting trees because they have to have stuff to cook. And so they use that, and then the desert keeps creeping south. And in the southern part of Africa and along the coast, huge cyclones, storms that that are just absolutely devastating. Famine and flood, often in the same space, depending on the season.
Yeah.
Because when the rains come, particularly if they've cut a lot of the vegetation, the rains are just devastating. And so they have floods, and then it washes away the crops. And so when it doesn't rain, they have nothing.
Yes.
So hunger, food insecurity is huge. So the predictable climate.
Yeah.
You know, it's just getting more and more difficult. It really puts us in the frame of mind. And Michaela Urban in The Office has really helped us put some language and begin to ask questions about mitigation. So instead of just responding to the latest flood or drought or cyclone, to say, how could we help prepare the church for these events so that they are able to not just survive, but continue to be a base of ministry and operation going forward. One of those, just a simple one, is providing toilets that will not be washed away in the next cyclone. And because when that happens, when the water is polluted, contaminated, then cholera rises. One of the countries in which we work presently, they have more than 7,000 cholera cases.
Wow.
That they're fighting. And one of the ways that we would like to participate in is to help provide sanitary conditions that are sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, Michaela's talked about that too, about how, yes, there are people that die in flooding and that kind of stuff, but a lot of it has to do with the disease that gets transmitted after these experiences. And so even high-powered officials that are doing humanitarian work through the UN have said latrines and latrines that are able to be flood resistant are some of the most important things that we can do. And imagine a church providing those kinds of basic necessities to a community. I don't know that there's a better way for a church to be a light in a community than to be a safe harbor for the people that are a part of it. And I think there's an opportunity there for the churches in Africa to really support, connect, and care for people in the midst of really, really tragic situations.
Yeah. And your phrase, safe harbor, that choice of words, one of the realities of Africa is that there is lots of conflict.
Yeah.
And conflict seems to escalate to warfare. And warfare pushes people to migrate. They're fleeing war zones. So an example right now is what's going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So there's warfare not too far from where we have the main part of our church in Goma. And that church has had to deal with this mass influx of Church of God folks that are now, they have lost all their livelihood. They had to leave their sewing machine or their plow or their whatever behind, come to the city. They have nothing.
Yeah.
And how do we help them as they have relocated, not by choice, but by force?
Yeah.
And what does it say to be a follower of Jesus as you reach out to those folks, the refugees?
Yeah. So as we close today, my last question is this. How can we, people listening to this, be praying for you, both personally and the work that you do, but also for our churches around the region and the churches as they engage and support their communities?
Well, we are, it's hard to believe, but retirement age. And
no way.
Yeah, I know. There are certain things that we'd really like to see happen before we end this phase of our ministry. There are two countries where the government mandates that a church to be recognized officially to be able to do funerals and weddings, etc., have to have a piece of land a certain size. And on that land, they have to have a building that's a certain size with flush toilets and an office that can be locked. And we would really like to help those two countries get these things that they need to be officially recognized. And
that's awesome.
Just wisdom in knowing, you know, the book When Helping Hurts, how to do these things in a way that doesn't cause more problems in the area, and to just keep walking alongside our missionaries. And they all have lots of challenges, as do our national leaders face a lot of hard things.
And I would add to that, that we really want to help the church in Africa be unified.
Yeah.
And so we don't want to do anything that would create disunity.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a really hard thing to discern.
Yeah.
As we would, for example, these two places where they need a certain size land and a certain size building and meet these qualifications, how do you promote that and not make other churches who have equally important needs feel less important?
Yeah.
And so how do we work together to craft a message that is from Africa, not just from us?
Yeah.
One of those things I just would say, in our meeting, our sub-regional meeting in East Africa, all the churches in East Africa, the five leaders and some of the other leaders gathered together, and they all together with one voice said, it's important to build this church in Rwanda. So if we can do that kind of thing, it creates unity in Africa, and we speak together with one voice to others who might want to participate in that.
That's awesome. Well, John and Gwen, thank you so much for this time today, for sharing about the region, what's going on. We'll be praying for you and for the leaders across Africa. And there's so much ahead for that continent, challenges, but also great opportunity. And we're grateful that we get to be a part of both of those and supporting the church in the midst of it. So thanks so much for sharing.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.